The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security, disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group at 865-566-0800 or visit dag-us.com.
It's time for The Drive's Top 4 at 4.
The things we could talk about in a During the Break podcast is what it is. Let's go to the news desk over there now. Jake Lester has your top four at four. Jake, go ahead.
Yeah, number one, after UConn's game against Vandy last night, head coach Gino Auriemma sounded off on transfer Avena Westbrook having her eligibility appeal denied by the NCAA. He took aim at the Tennessee women's basketball program, describing it as an unhealthy environment. And Tennessee Athletic Director Philip Fulmer, who Auriemma said would not support the transfer. He said, and I quote, "Well, think about this. A kid is in an environment that's not necessarily healthy. An environment that, if you knew what the environment was, which I can't say, you would not want your kid in that environment. And the athletic director there, Philip Fulmer, knows it. Okay, but he's not going to support her leaving, which would have helped us a little bit. And now her reward is she has to sit at home even when we travel and can't play. So she should have stuck it out, right?"
Harsh, I don't want to say harsh, hard words from Gino Auriemma to Tennessee Athletic Director Philip Fulmer and Lady Vols basketball. Not pleasant. Could have been a little more delicate.
He better check himself before he wrecks himself.
Yeah, that's us.
Coming at the captain.
I just think you sound like an idiot, to be honest with you. If you got the balls to come out and say something like that, finish off your statement by saying, you know, by giving the examples. Is what it is. Maybe because it's a Venus story to tell and not Geno's. Well, that could be something, too. Number two, Jake.
Number two, Memphis has declared James Wiseman ineligible and will withhold him from all games after the freshman basketball star withdrew his lawsuit against the NCAA on Thursday. The school also announced that it would apply for his reinstatement by the NCAA. In order to move the matter forward, the university has declared James ineligible and will immediately apply for reinstatement, the university's statement said. Pending that notification, James will be withheld from competition but will continue to practice with the team.
Davey, your thoughts?
Yeah, as it relates to this situation, the NCAA probably wasn't going to allow anything to happen. They're going to settle this thing behind closed doors. Wiseman will be playing again before this season is over, if you're asking me. But they told Penny and Memphis, hey, until he withdraws his lawsuit, nothing good will come from this. And so basically in order to kind of get some talks going, the NCAA is like, all right, we're going to withdraw the lawsuit and we'll go from there.
I think Memphis blinked is what I think happened.
It could have been something like that.
I think the NCAA, because, I mean, you were talking the other day, Trey, about they were going to put him in the tournament, the money and all that. I don't think they would have, honestly. I think they would have said, you aren't invited. They're going to make plenty of money without Memphis.
Also think this is kind of looking at Memphis and saying, hey, you sued us. You played him when we told you he was ineligible. Maybe they slap him with a 9-10-game suspension. I don't know.
Hopefully at least 8-game suspension.
We'll find out. Number three.
Number three, Notre Dame's streak of 273 consecutive home sellouts is expected to end with Saturday's game against Navy, according to the school.
What?
The streak. The second longest active run to Nebraska's 373, according to the South Bend Tribune, dates back to the final game of the 1973 season when Notre Dame beat Air Force on Thanksgiving Day in a game moved from Saturday to accommodate an ABC telecast. Based on ticket sales through Wednesday, we do not anticipate sellouts for our games against Navy and Boston College, Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick said in a statement. That this comes during a time of sustained success for our football program reflects both challenges impacting the ticket market nationwide and the unique dynamics of this year's schedule.
You got to be a diehard fan to go sit in the stands at Notre Dame in the middle of late in November to watch them play a team like Boston College. Davey, you were talking about Navy's a different story because Navy is like 7-2 on the year.
Yeah, this is a top 25 matchup, so I
rivalry game too.
Thought this was one you would expect to be a sellout for.
Right.
Is Navy down this year?
No, I mean, they're 21st up in the country right now.
That's what's surprising about it, yeah.
Maybe they don't want to go and watch Navy beat them.
But in the past, I did go on to read that article. Notre Dame usually only played one game in November at home. Now they're playing, I think, three this season, so they expected to have a ticket drop off, but that's a long streak that goes to an end. So
it's especially impressive because during that streak, they expanded the stadium over 20,000 seats and still sold it out every single time.
And think of the coaches they've had to go through that too.
Charlie Weiss,
Bob Davey. All right, number four.
Number four, Thursday Night Football showcases the Pittsburgh Steelers traveling to Cleveland to play the Browns at 8:20 on Fox. The Browns are 2.5-point favorites on MyBookie.
All right, I'm excited for this one. Actually, you know what? I want to see what the Steelers defense does against the Browns tonight. Is this a rivalry game?
I mean, like, they're both AFC North.
Kind of. People just want to see Baker Mayfield lose now, don't they?
I think it's hilarious how, obviously, he talked all offseason, and if you're looking from a money standpoint, he actually did really well because he landed himself a lot of sponsorship deals. Right. Like, I mean, on Sunday, all you see is Baker Mayfield commercials. So it worked out for him there, but as, I mean, a lot of other people have said this, I mean, no other quarterback before has given his opponent ammunition to want to beat a quarterback so badly for the things, for the antics that you see from Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not been an ideal second season for the former first overall pick. You're looking at a team that on paper you would think, man, they should have something going, but they just don't. I don't see how Freddie Kitchens can survive the year if this trend continues for what are they, Jake, on the season? Are they 2-6? Or no, they're 10 games through, so they're 2-8.
I believe they're 2-6.
Oh, okay. I guess they had their bye too. So I don't know.
Getting ugly out there.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so they're 2-6, so they'll have their ninth game, plus they've already had their bye for this is week 10. All right.
We'll see. Tonight should be interesting. That game will kick off at 8:15 on local Fox or NFL Network. Let's go to the phone lines now for my bookie, my man Christopher Smith, joining us to preview NFL and college football coming up this weekend. Christopher, what's up, brother?
Hey, Trey. How's it going?
Good, man. It's good to hear from you, buddy. Some interesting matchups tonight. We were just talking about Pittsburgh and the Cleveland Browns. Let's go start off right there. Are you getting into this in any form or fashion, even the money line, over-under, the spread? Where are you at on this one? Are you touching it?
I'll have a small play on the Browns against the spread here, especially now it looks like it's under 3. I think the Steelers have won 4 straight games, and I think 5 of 6 even, since Big Ben got hurt, and their defense is obviously playing outstanding. And Cleveland's stock has plummeted, obviously, like you talked about, since the start of the season. But this is one of those games. It's a Thursday night game, a short week, tends to be low scoring. Mason Rudolph, I think, is really overvalued in the market right now. He hasn't been good, especially when he's been pressured, and they've been relying on their defense and their running game. I think the Browns' defense can actually hold up pretty well against the Steelers' offense and kind of expose Rudolph some. And Mayfield's had the same problem when he's been pressured, but Freddie Kitchens finally has been relying more on the running game. And so I think this is just a spot in the market where, the stock for the Steelers is maybe a little higher than it should be, and the stock on the Browns is a little lower than it should be. And they're at home, and I just think they match up pretty well in this game.
Are you going to get on anything between North Carolina and Pittsburgh tonight on ESPN?
I'm not. I think Pitt is the better team and actually matches up pretty well against North Carolina, but I think only one game, I think it's maybe eight of 9 games that North Carolina has played has been decided by one possession. And the other one was like a 10-point North Carolina win. So they've been just so difficult to predict. It's always just coming down to the last possession or two in their games this year. So for that reason, I'm going to lay off. But, if I had to recommend something, it would probably be to take the Pitt money line and maybe use it on a parlay or two.
Christopher, I'm going to switch it up with you right here and talk a little college basketball. I guess as far as odds right now, we've seen a little bit of action from some teams, but as far as like the best odds that you've seen on a team you would probably recommend for championship odds, what college basketball teams do you think have some pretty good numbers going their way?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I would say like
about Evansville.
Evansville's a good one, but I think like this far away from the NCAA tournament, what you don't want to do is get your money locked up. Like, you know, unless you're just super super rich, you only have so much money in your bankroll, right, for your betting account. And so to take a percentage of that and lock it up on a team like a Duke or a Kentucky or a Michigan State, where the return, if they do win, is going to be pretty small. And even if they have a really good season, their odds are going to be pretty similar, you know, before the NCAA tournament. So you're not really getting good value, and that's a long time you can tie up your money. So I'd look for teams that have a realistic chance of winning, but maybe their odds are low in the market, and or maybe it's because they have an injury right now. So to me, a team I really liked before the season was Seton Hall. And now their best player, Miles Powell, has suffered an ankle injury. He may not play tonight against Michigan State. I would look hard at Seton Hall if they lose to Michigan State without Miles Powell tonight. And if he's out for another week or two and they get another loss, then you may end up getting really good odds on a team that I think can win it all and also has maybe not looked as good as they are because of an injury to their best player.
Some good insight. Right now, Seton Hall is plus 4,000.
Some nice money to be made if you want to go down that line. Let's go back. Pigskin right now. An interesting weekend in the SEC, Christopher. The big-time matchup is Georgia-Auburn. I think we can all agree with that. But you've got games like South Carolina and Texas A&M and, you know, Missouri, Florida. So before we get to Georgia-Auburn, what other SEC game this weekend catches your eye?
Yeah, I think the Missouri-Florida game, I'm not going to be betting on it, but I think it's interesting just because Kelly Bryant has been out with a hamstring injury now for a couple weeks. And a lot of times, like teams like Florida, when they sort of lose out on their biggest goals of the season, which the Gators did by losing to Georgia, you kind of see them maybe deflated a little bit in the next week or two. Well, Florida came back after that game and had a huge win and another cover against an SEC team. But a lot of times, if those teams that kind of lose out on their big goals, if they do well the next week, it doesn't necessarily stick because they don't have just tons of motivation against these teams when they're favored, especially. And so if Kelly Bryant is healthy, I think Missouri looks a lot better than what they have been and actually has a chance to compete right through the end and maybe has a chance of upsetting Florida. But if he plays and he's sort of limited or he doesn't play, then I think Florida rolls. So I think monitor that. If you can get a sense before kickoff that Bryant is going to be effective in that game, then I would give Missouri a look maybe on Saturday.
George is heading to the plains, brother. I think it is the SEC game of the day, as it should be. Are you touching this one? Anything with the over-unders? Are you sitting at the -3, -4 line right now for Georgia? Where's your heads at going into this one?
Yeah, I think under was definitely the play. The problem was it was at like 44.5 early in the week, and now it's below 42 down to 40.5, which, you know, 42 is a key number since it's divisible by 7. I think Georgia's defense has not allowed more than 17 points all season. And South Carolina scored 20, but there was a pick 6 in that game, and they've had 3 shutouts. Against the run, they've just been outstanding. And the one area of weakness they've had is giving up a lot of plays to number one receivers on the opposition. So Auburn's best chance is to just lean on Seth Williams. Now, Bo Nix has really struggled against teams with good defenses this season. And so I think Auburn's only hope is a huge game for Seth Williams and Anthony Schwartz. Georgia obviously will be game planning against that. The thing about Georgia to me that really bothers me is they have the number 3 team in the country by talent, if you look at the 24/7 composite rankings. And yet, they run at one of the slowest paces in the country, like 126th in, you know, seconds per snap. And to me, like, that's a strategy if you're like a 14 seed in an NCAA tournament or you're, you know, a service academy with a huge talent disadvantage to try to increase variance. But if you have the best team and you reduce the number of snaps that are being played in the game, you have less of a chance to leverage your talent. And so I think it helps for Georgia on under bets, but it makes, even in this game against Auburn, where I think they're the better team, it gives Auburn a much better chance of an upset if there's only 10 possessions on each side.
Okay, we've got about 45 seconds up, Christopher. Alabama, Mississippi State, or LSU and Ole Miss? Which game would you touch and why?
Well, I think Alabama, Mississippi State is interesting just because, you know, the spread was 24.5 last week in the Westgate Games of the Year look-ahead lines, and it came out 21, and it's gone down as low as 17.5. And that's because the status of Tua Tagovailoa for Alabama is up in the air with his ankle injury. I think Alabama has a chance to cover, you know, that 17.5, 18, even if Tua doesn't play. So you may want to put in a speculative play on Alabama at that number. And then if Tua does play, you're sitting pretty. And if he doesn't, you'll still have a chance to cover.
That's fantastic stuff. Christopher, tell everybody where they can follow you and tell me what's going on in my bookie, brother.
Yeah, you can find me at CFB Locksmith on Twitter. And as we mentioned earlier in the week, we are staring down the barrel of our Turkey Day free play coming up. And that will allow you to have a $250 free bet, essentially, on the Bears-Lions game. And if your bet wins, you win. And if your bet loses, we'll refund your account. So it's basically a bet of up to $250 where you cannot lose.
God, that's fantastic. Okay, time to jump on that. Christopher, man, hope you have a great weekend. Good luck betting. We're going to talk to you Monday as we get ready for next week in the SEC and some college hoops, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, buddy. Christopher Smith, presented by MyBookie. Follow him at CFB Locksmith, putting out his picks and talking college football as well. Come back on the other side, Bear and Davey and Jake. We're going to get back on the discussion of Tennessee Vol players. Who's in your top five? Who's in your starting five of all-time Vol players? And then Nick Bromberg is going to join us around 4:35. Be back on the other side. It's a drive on Fox Sports Knoxville.
This is The Drive.
In the 3 years that I've known you, that is the, without a doubt, the
go ahead, say it, Davey.
I was ranking them that way. We're talking about Tennessee. Hold on, I'm getting the listeners set up. We're talking about our top five players all time for Tennessee basketball. During the conversation, I was like, "Hey guys, I got my sixth man." So not my top five, but my sixth man, Dame Bradshaw. Shouts out.
I'll tell you who mine is.
Skylar McBee.
No, Lamonte Turner, the cat killer.
What?
Yeah.
Like, of all time?
He's my sixth man.
Bear, I'm sure your trays is going to be different. I have capped mine. I mean, like, if I had to say who I think are the best five players all time in the history of Tennessee basketball, I'm going to say Bernard King, Allen Houston, Dell Ellis, Ernie Grunfeld, and Chris Lofton. That's probably what I'm going to have as far as, like, top five all time. But I've, like, if I'm having to put it together a lineup, I'm just going post 2000, because that's
Let's go from 2000 in the last 19 years. What's your starting five? You can add a six man.
Well, it's cutting off half the.
No. We'll get to the previous 58 years before that. But
well, it's not 58 years. It's just. I mean, we had one of the goats. Why don't we go to the phone? We've got somebody on hold.
I'd like to get Philly's take on this matter. Philly.
Oh, Philly joins us. What's up, buddy?
You're on the line.
What's going on, guys?
Man, we're just here
talking about Tennessee basketball.
Kind of a WS show, isn't it?
Yeah, he's gone forever.
We have intelligent basketball conversation going on.
We got fed up. He got tired of me. And,
oh, Trey.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about what just happened.
I don't understand this Tennessee basketball history. Are we getting the highest recruited players? Or are we getting the ones that are the best players?
We've morphed it into who's your. I'll tell you what. Give me your starting five.
This is how I'm looking at it, Philly. I'm looking at it as if I had to get the best five players post 2000 out on a court in their prime. Who would those five players be? And for me, my point guard would be Josh Richardson. I would have Chris Lofton at shooting guard, Tobias Harris at small forward, Grant Williams at power forward, and Ron Slay at center.
I kind of agree with some of that, but I've had Vincent Yarbrough as the three men over Tobias Harris because Spencer Yarbrough was here for 3 years, 4 years, and Bias Harris was here 1 year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not really taking how long they stayed at Tennessee into account. I'm just
well,
from a pure talent standpoint.
And, Tobias Harris really didn't do anything. I mean, his freshman year here. They had a terrible team.
It wasn't good. I mean, granted, I'm putting, like, watching how he's done in the NBA into my equation.
Well, I mean, I guess Josh Richardson's probably the most underrated player in the last 20 years over there. Really?
But yeah, I mean, if I'm having to go with people who actually graduated from the University of Tennessee, yeah, take out Tobias Harris, and I think I would agree with you to put Vincent Yarbrough in at my three spot.
Phil, do you think Josh is undervalued all time?
He's a good player, but I think Keon Johnson coming in, he'll be better as a sophomore than Josh Richardson was as a senior.
Come on, now, we can't make that comparison yet.
I've seen him. He's got the real deal. And Jaden Springer, he might end up being I doubt if he's going to stay here more than 1 or 2 years, but that guy's he can fill it up.
If you had would you? Oh man! If you had to pick your sixth man, who was somebody that was flowing back in the '80s, the late '80s, and early '90s?
Well, I'll give you the best sixth man they ever had over there is DeJuan Smith, and he was a starter part of the time.
God, he was a bad man.
Outside of Chris Lofton, he hit as many big shots as Chris Lofton did.
He took over that game in Memphis as well, him and J.P. Prince.
That, and he owned Billy Donovan.
He did. Yeah, he did.
Billy Donovan hated him.
Daggered them in Gainesville.
Speaking of Florida, Billy Williford tweets in at me and says, you got to have C.J. Watson in at point.
Ooh.
There you go. Well, yeah, it is. I guess we forget about him, too. But you're right. I think that from 1960 to 2000 and from 2000 to the present is probably the way you ought to do that.
Two different generations. History. Right. I think it's two different generation type deals. 19 years of what Pearl, what Donnie, what Konzo had, and now what Rick has had. I mean, I'll be honest with you. You could field two teams of the players in the last 19 years, and I think they could go up against anybody in the country. You could field two different teams.
Yeah.
With the talent that the talent that's rolled through here in Knoxville in the last 19 years.
Well, if you count Jerry Green had talent, even though I couldn't coach a little.
Right, but I'm saying, like, it's interesting. Like, you look back and you look at all these different schools and college basketball, but the amount of talent, though, that you look at now and you're like, wow, okay, these guys all went to Tennessee, and you look at that talent, and you think, "Dang, they kind of squandered it. There were opportunities to win more." You know what I mean?
Well, that's true, but there's a reason why basketball's been second field to football all these years over here.
Why is that?
Dickie
the administration
didn't
want to win basketball.
Yeah. Well, I mean, does it not? Okay. Well, let me ask you this though: when Tennessee puts so much money into Thompson Bowling Arena, is that not saying something that, hey, we want to win basketball games, or when they built Pratt Pavilion?
Well, yeah, but that's when we had Pearl.
Yeah, right. That's when Pearl got here.
Yeah, but they didn't do anything before it. Pearl. I mean, Pearl comes in. That's like James Franklin at Vanderbilt. James Franklin comes in, starts winning at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt builds him an indoor facility. Bruce Pearl comes in, wins at Tennessee. Tennessee builds him an indoor facility.
Yeah, but the problem is when we had Bernard and those guys, only Phil pointed this out to me, back channels, the NCAA tourney, only one team got to go, and that was, you know, Kentucky.
Yeah, out of the league, yeah. If you come in second in your conference or even you tie, Tennessee tied with Kentucky a couple times to the championships, and then you go to the tournament. So,
then the 1 year we did make it, Syracuse came in here with a young, unknown coach, or a first-year coach by the name
Jim
of
Boeheim.
Boeheim and beat us.
So that had Louis to be, Orr and Roosevelt Bowie. 79?
Was that 1977.
So, which is wild. So, you guys, I don't know, me and Phil saw Bernard. Phil probably saw him a lot more than I did, but actually got to see the Ernie and Bernie show live.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Phil, you stay on the phone. Let me ask you this. You guys saw Ernie and Bernie. We saw PB&J.
There's no comparison.
Is there any kind of comparison
there? No. I mean, you don't understand.
Who's that?
Williams and Schofield. That's not fair to those two guys.
I mean, I like Grant Williams and Schofield. They're no comparison to
That's unfair to him. I mean, Bernard King, honest to God, you can ask Phil, if he hadn't blown his knee up in the 70s, early 80s, he would have had a shot to have been the GOAT. I'm talking Jordan and LeBron and Kobe be arguing about who's second.
The two best players I've ever seen in the SEC are Pete Maravich and Bernard King.
How many years?
That goes all the way to now.
How many years combined did Bernie and Ernie play together?
3 years.
Three
years.
Because Bernie was a year behind him, right?
Yeah.
But which one?
Ernie was the older one.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So you don't think there's any kind of comparison whatsoever between the duos?
No, because Bernard.
Well, they're comparable. They're good players, but I mean.
I'm just talking about dynamic duos at the university.
Both of them were All-Americans. Grant was only All-American. I mean, he was an All-American, Lenny. But
wouldn't you say it was a lot easier? And this is not a slight at Ernie and Bernie whatsoever. But let me ask you this. Wouldn't you say it was a little bit easier to become an All-SEC, All-American back in the late 80s compared to where we are now in the 2000s with all the talent that's out there?
You mean late 70s?
Late 70s, I'm sorry. Yeah, 70s, I'm sorry.
At Tennessee, no. It was a lot harder back then.
I'll say, too, like, I mean, if you're looking at the comparison, it's going to be in the favor of a point guard and a center kind of being a duo together versus a small forward and a power forward.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that. There's two duos that come to mind when I think of Tennessee basketball, Ernie and Bernie, and then I think of the duo that was most recently Grant and Admiral. Like, Tennessee's had great basketball players in the last 19 years in the 2000s, but yeah. I can't figure out a better duo that played together that were in sync like that.
Well, I'll give you a pair that were more talented, but they're not as good as Admiral and Williams is Yarbrough and Marcus Hayslip. They're more talented, but they're not the basketball players that the other two guys are.
Marcus Hayslip was a really good basketball player. Really,
I want to ask you something before I get off here.
Ask away.
This Memphis stuff's going on. I haven't heard y'all or see you going to talk about it and didn't talk about it yet.
Watch it.
Easy. What?
What's the question?
I don't know what you said about the TSSAA and all the stuff coming out of Memphis.
The TSAA went back and retroactively suspended or made him ineligible.
So they stripped East of all those wins?
No. Not yet. They said that Wiseman was not – he was only eligible to play 1 year, and he played 2 years. So they went
– they got an injunction.
Retroactively, they went back and – I guess you could say, you know, disqualified him. Which doesn't make – the only reason they did that is because Penny Hardaway testified – I know we have to take a break because we have Nick Bromberg on – but he testified in a deposition that he didn't give any money to James Wiseman's mom. He didn't support them. He didn't try to recruit them to play for his AAU team. So Penny kind of did it to himself in a deposition.
I hate it for him.
We'll talk about that more.
See you.
Philly, have a good day, buddy. Coming up on the other side, Nick Bromberg from Yahoo Sports talking college football playoff, talking SEC football, and I get to ask a question or two about NASCAR. Deal with it. Be back on the other side to Drive Fox Sports Knoxville.
We're tuned in to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
The Drive on Fox Sports Knoxville, rolling along on this Thursday, late in the 4 o'clock hour. Happy to be joined by my man, Nick Bromberg from Yahoo Sports. Nick, what up, brother?
What's going on? How are you?
Nothing. We had a conversation last night. You know what, damn it, I'm starting off with it. We had a conversation last night for about 45 minutes on crazy things that could happen in the NASCAR world, and then look what happens to start the day off.
And we've got potentially a one-and-done at Stewart Haas Racing with Daniel Suarez out of the 41 car. Been reported by multiple people, so we'll see. Cole Custer did the old, I declined to comment, because he's the guy that's going to replace Suarez potentially in 2020. He was up during media day today and said, "No, I'm just focused on this weekend." And when a guy says, "I'm just focused on the task at hand," it doesn't say no, you can generally get a pretty good idea of where that's going
to
lead.
Oh, my gosh. We'll get back to this at the end of the interview, but we were it's crazy. We're talking about it last night, then it breaks today. So it's what it is.
We are soothsayers, right?
I'm telling you, man, we did good on this one. We knew it was coming. We just started to figure out when. Man, the college football playoff comes out. Last weekend, LSU versus Alabama, the craziness that was. You look at how the rankings came out this week. Are you satisfied with where everybody's at right now? And in your mind, who are some potential sleepers that maybe we're not paying attention to right now?
You know, I think we got to look at the Pac-12. You know, we all wrote off the Pac-12, at least I did. And after, you know, Oregon loses, you're thinking, okay, Utah's the preseason favorite, but are they really a title contender? You see how USC has just kind of been blah, especially with Utah losing to USC. And now I think the Pac-12 is really well positioned here to sneak a spot into the playoff, because what happens if you've got 11-1 Utah versus 11-1 Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game. Right now those teams are 6-7, right behind Alabama at 5. The winner of that game is probably going to jump Alabama if it has not jumped Alabama before playoff championship weekend. So I think Alabama right now here, if you're an Alabama fan, you have got to be the biggest LSU fan in the world, because you need the Tigers to go 13-0. The disaster scenario here for Alabama is LSU goes 12-0, loses in the SEC championship game to a 12-1 Georgia.
Chaos. Because,
yep, there's the chaos, because I think LSU's still in, and Georgia's definitely in, and there's your two SEC teams, and sorry, Alabama, you're not getting it.
Do you know how mad they would be if that happens, bro? Like,
oh, it's gonna be worse than it is than it was in 2017.
Yes,
but you know, I think that would be fair, because quite frankly, LSU's been the best team. I think Ohio State is gonna probably win the Big Ten, but here's another chaos theory. That step away from the SEC for a moment. What happens if Minnesota runs the table and goes 12-0, and you have, because Minnesota's going to get a couple decent wins if they do that. They are going to have to beat Iowa. They're going to have to beat Wisconsin. Those are two pretty good wins.
And Ohio State, right?
Yeah. Well, I haven't even got to that game yet. They're a 3-point underdog against Iowa on Saturday. But anyway, you've got a 12-0 Minnesota team. You've got a 12-0 Ohio State team playing each other in the Big Ten championship game. What happens if one of those teams has one loss and looks really, really good? And it's a really close game. Say it's Ohio State. Minnesota beats them on a last-second field goal or something. You know, we can go full chaos theory on this, and that's what makes this so fun.
Well, the crazy part, too, on this is if I think no matter what happens, unless Auburn comes out and beats Georgia this weekend, I think we are staring down the barrel of a two-team SEC college football playoff. Like, no matter what, right? I mean, unless chaos happens with Georgia.
Not this year.
I don't think an SEC team. I don't think we're.
You don't think if. Okay, you don't think. Nick, you don't think if Georgia beats LSU that we don't have two teams in the. And they play them in the championship game, we don't have two teams in the college football playoff from the SEC?
Oh, without a doubt. If 12-1 Georgia beats what would be a 12-1 LSU, I think both teams are in. Absolutely. But that's the only scenario I think right now that we see two SEC teams in the playoff.
And you don't think somehow Alabama beats the hell out of the rest of their opponents, and then they're sitting at number 5 and LSU whacks Georgia, that Bama doesn't slip in at 4?
The only thing that I could think of that would lead to this is Auburn winning this week.
Good point.
So yep. Auburn beats Georgia, then Alabama beats the heck out of Auburn. Yep. That gives Alabama a good win. And then you can play the dumb transitive property game, basically bookending the season by saying Alabama walloped Auburn, who beat Oregon.
Yeah, they'd still have to have some help. I guess, Nick, to ask you right now, I know having to see into the future on this one, but if you're having to fast forward to December and everything plays itself out, what four teams do you believe make the college football playoff?
Right now, I really do think, and maybe I'm putting too much stock in the Pac-12, I think it's the 3 undefeated teams, and I think it's the Pac-12 champion. Because I like the way the schedule sets up right now for Utah and Oregon, because you look at the Pac-12, it is a sea of mediocrity, not much better than the sea of mediocrity that's in the ACC right now. And I think Clemson's going to coast to 3-0. I mean, heck, team that could go to the Orange Bowl is a 35-point dog to Clemson on Saturday. That's just absolutely ridiculous in Lake Forest here. But, you know, we're looking at it now where I think, you know, Utah having the top 10 win for Oregon or Utah, whoever it ends up being in that, would be enough to vault over Alabama, given they're going to have that extra game. And we have seen so far in the 5 years of this playoff that the committee really, really likes conference championship.
I'm not being an ass about this, but I'm going to ask the question: Who is Oregon and Utah beaten? And I'm not. That's a question. Like I'm wondering because Oregon lost to Auburn. BYU beat Utah. No, BYU Auburn. Didn't beat Utah. I'm sorry. Utah beat BYU, but Utah still got a loss in there as well. So, I mean, I guess the better question is, here it is, Nick, if Minnesota is sitting at 12-1 at the end of the season, are you taking a Big Ten Minnesota team or are you taking somebody from the Pac-12 with one loss?
Minnesota at 12-1 would have lost to Ohio State then, right? They would have had to have that 13th game.
Maybe. Yeah, okay. Maybe. Maybe they drop one and then go beat Ohio State in the Big Ten title game.
Then I think the Big Ten champion gets in that scenario. And then, then maybe it's Ohio State that gets left out. I think the committee is going to ultimately end up weighing the conference championship here. And to answer the best opponent for Utah and Oregon question, I think it's probably Washington. They both have beaten Washington.
Yeah, Washington was 25th whenever Oregon beat them.
But
it makes it completely interesting to me, Davey and Nick, on how this thing's going to play out because we've literally got 3 weeks of chaos left.
Nick, we do.
And technically 4 weeks with the championship games.
Nick, are you putting any stock in Baylor?
Oh, God. You know, Baylor, here's the thing. This is why I'm not trusting Baylor. This is a Baylor program that has 9 wins, 9-0, 5 have come by 8 points or less, a couple in overtime. One of those 8 points or less games is Rice. You know, if Minnesota can get crap for the way that they played a very weak non-conference schedule, so does Baylor. And quite frankly, I think Baylor loses to Oklahoma. I don't trust Baylor to run the table again. I wouldn't be surprised if Baylor even loses to Texas. I think Baylor's a very good football team that, you know, 9-3 is a fantastic season for them. But I think the committee has it right by putting Baylor where they are. And if they go out and beat Oklahoma, that's fine, but this is a team that, you know, took TCU to overtime at 9-9 last week. And at one point, I think Charlie Brewer was like 17 of 23 passing for 98 yards. That's not going to beat Oklahoma. Heck no.
I completely agree with you. I guess from having watched Baylor the last couple of weeks, they just continually find a way to win even when they probably shouldn't. And it's just kind of like one of those, man, is this like a team of destiny somehow to where they're by no means the best team on the field, but they just pull it out.
Yeah, you know, and we're getting to that point now where we're having these dual arguments, and it's trying to figure out what is better in the sense of we've got a Clemson team. We just talked about it with the Pac-12 teams of, you know, hey, you know, their schedule's really not that good because of the strength of their conferences. And then we're also having the similar discussion about Georgia, given where they are in the playoff, because quite frankly, they have the worst loss of anyone in the top 10.
It's not even close, but, brother.
It's not even close. But they are there on the strength of their good wins by beating a Notre Dame team who I think is going to struggle with Navy this weekend. I'll probably wear that when Notre Dame blows them out by 40. But I think Navy's a legit football team, always seem to play Notre Dame tough. And then, you know, the Florida game as well, which, you know, the way that game goes the last 12 years, every team has to win 3 in a row before they cycle over. So this is, you know, Georgia's destiny here. So I don't know. I think I also, quite frankly, wouldn't be surprised if Florida, you know, maybe struggled a little bit, made it a little closer than it should be this weekend at Missouri. So I don't know.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Nick. I think there's been so much chaos in the last 3 weeks that you have to look at these win-loss records of these opponents and try to factor that in. Nick, okay, so, brother, we're here. It's the end of the season. We've been talking for almost a whole year since we started this. I think NASCAR is the longest season in sports. We finally made it. We're here to Miami. You're flying down Sunday morning, day of the race. Give me your pick to win it all on Sunday, and also on top of that, your final thoughts on the whole Suarez leaving Tony Stewart and Stewart Haas Racing. We got a minute and a half.
All right, I got to stick with Denny Hamlin. I want to toot my own horn here. Before the playoffs, I picked these final four guys exactly right. Not that I think that was much of an achievement, given how they had performed in the regular season. Anyway, I picked Hamlin before the playoffs. I'm sticking with Hamlin again. If you're the betting type, somehow he is tied with Harvick at some sites, being the underdog, which I don't understand why Kyle Busch should be the favorite in this scenario, given that he has not won a race in 21 races, and the guys he's competing against have each won races in the last three races. Anyway, Hamlin's my pick for the championship. Suarez is going to be a fascinating test case because you've got a guy who is having, honestly, the best season of his career. When you look at the point standings, I realize that's not a fair comparison because the team's closing 17 points, more top fives than he's ever had in a season, and he's getting one and done at a top-tier team because he apparently doesn't have enough money attached to him. Well, not very many people have enough money attached to them, and so if Suarez is going to have some funding, where does he go, and where does he even stay in the Cup Series? Because there really aren't that many seats open, and I don't think you want to go from Stewart Haas Racing to Front Row Motorsports.
RCR Xfinity Series, buddy. We'll see how this one plays out. Nick, man, it's been fun, buddy. We'll do it again next week talking college football, but I've had a fun NASCAR season with you. Hope you have a great time down at Homestead, and maybe your Chiefs will pull one off this weekend.
Hey, that'll be nice to have the Chiefs actually win. The sad thing is, it's been like 25 degrees this week in Kansas City, so I'm going to go down to like 80 degree Miami and come back and wish summer was back.
Have fun, my brother. Thank you so much for joining us. Everybody follow him at Nick Bromberg, Yahoo Sports, college football. Fantastic stuff, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, bud. Good stuff from Nick. Really went in depth. We'll finish up the hour on that. We'll go back and talk about some of his college football playoff scenarios. I know you don't care about NASCAR, and I really don't care. You know why? Because I get to drive the show today. Be back on the other side. It is The Drive. We're on Fox Sports Knoxville.
The Drive's podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group today at 865-566-0800. Applying for disability can be very tedious. Having an experienced attorney on your side makes it easy. Call Disability Advantage Group, 865-566-0800, or visit online at dag-us.com.
The unimaginable. The Drive.
Back on The Drive, Fox Sports Knoxville, Fan Run Radio, 1340 AM, 105.7 FM. Breaking news out of the NFL. Dun, dun, dun. Another Florida Gator has been, what do you say, Davey? Not kicked off a team?
No, he's released.
Released from a... This one has some substance.
He's been waived.
Antonio Callaway is currently appealing a 10-game suspension for another violation of NFL's substance abuse policy, sources say. That is not the only reason the team waived him. Okay. But it
no, it's not.
I know it's not. But it's a big part of it.
It is an
important factor, Ian Rappaport said. He had his hearing in the last week.
I don't think he even played.
He was also
this
late
week
for a team meet.
Because he was late, yeah. But that
but
might
excuse
even
me,
be
though.
More to...
I mean, drug infraction, 10-game suspension, late to a meeting. Completely on two different levels. Completely. And you know what it is? It's the sticky icky. It's the green. It's what got him in trouble down at Florida. He's lucky he's not violating his pretrial diversion that was going on two years ago at the University of Florida with the credit card situation. Because it was a 36-month period that he was on pretrial diversion. I've seen the documents. So he's lucky he's not getting popped on any kind of probation or anything like that as well, because this is not the first time.
If you're looking at Cleveland right now,
it's a dumpster fire.
Antonio Callaway, we knew he had problems coming into the league. That's kind of why he slipped in the draft a little bit.
It was a lot more than weed. He got suspended in the league because of weed.
But I mean, Freddie Kitchens does not know how to run a program, and it's very evident right now. Like, they are struggling on all fronts. I mean, they're one of the most penalized teams in the league. They just consistently have these sort of things happen with their players just not being held accountable, even when it comes to just talking with the media. It's just not a well-run organization, which, I mean, we kind of knew that. We knew Jimmy Haslam doesn't know what he's doing. But this was kind of the one year where you thought everything's going to come together. Like, there was money. Like, I mean, the Browns were a top-five bet to, like, make a Super Bowl run and win it all at the beginning or before the season started whenever you're just looking at the odds.
But the fact, too, man, he got suspended again for this stuff. Again for the weed. Like, let me explain something to folks out there, too. It's pretty damn hard to get suspended for weed in the NFL. Because, really, you're only getting tested. You're mandated one test per year by the NFLPA. But, really, you're only getting tested one other time. Now, look, if you have a game where you go out and have 250-yard receiving and 10 receptions and 3 touchdowns, the NFL can't pop up and say, hey, let me do a random on you. But that rarely happens. The problem is Antonio Callaway, when he first got suspended, Davey, for his weed use and the substance abuse policy, you get put under a cloak that you are going to get drug tested every now and then. It is in the agreement. And the fact that, again, he does it and he's wasting all this talent and money, it's just mind-blowing to me. Go smoke some CBD, for God's sakes. I don't get it.
That'd show up as a positive.
No, it wouldn't.
CBD?
No, it ain't going to show up as a positive.
I'm fairly certain it does.
I have no idea on the matter, so I'm sitting out of this one.
I'm just saying there's too much wasted talent in Cleveland over the last couple of years, especially at the wide receiver spot.
I think it's ridiculous. These guys are getting suspended for weed, but the teams are passing out oxycodones like they're
right.
You know, M&Ms.
Opioid.
Agree completely. Agree completely.
Opioid.
Yeah, opioid. Opioid. Damn it. Opioid.
Crisis.
All right, we've got them both together.
Crisis, not crisis.
Just real quick, we got some breaking news out of the MLB.
Wait. Save it for the next hour. Top 5 and 5.
Okay,
give it to me right now.
We'll just hit the break.
I know, I was messing with you. We're the drive. We're coming back in the 5 o'clock hour. Jake's top 5 of 5. We got Aaron Torres joining us at 5:15. See you on the other side.